Kala Kavod. Okay, today is September 18th, 2017. We're here minutes before Rosh Hashanah, basically, and we want to devote today to a different topic, Maskan Revisited. But there's a lot here beneath the surface. It's not just the show and tell about Moscow. When I was in the rabbinate, so people would come to me, they want to learn about Judaism. They want to learn about Yiddishkeit. You follow me, Mickey? People come, ask a question. They want to learn about Yiddishkeit. So I would tell them, fine, you want to learn about Yiddishkeit, open up a matzah for Rosh Hashanah, go to Musaf, and take the 30 psukim, the Malkiyot, Zichronot, Shofrot, and analyze them. By the time you finish with those 30 psukim, you'll have the entire story of Am Yisrael, Torah Yisrael, and all that we believe in, beginning with Briat Olam, all the way through the eschatological vision, Yemot HaMashiach. All right, it's very powerful. We daven Rosh Hashanah, we shakel, it's a long Shmon Esrei. I remember in the rabbinate, I had them blow shofar in the silent Shmon Esrei, and that way I could daven. I had a whole system arranged with the Baal Tefillah, with Jonah Mann, Zichrono Levracha, was a YU graduate. I don't know if anyone here remembers him. Jonah was slightly older than I am. And he was a physicist, he worked in the armament industry, very bright fellow. And he was from 100%, he was my Baal Tefillah. And I would signal him when I finished Malkiyot, and then he would signal the Baal Tokeya. It was a real procedure, like if you know Tufat HaGoinim, it's a Berekiyim. Have a lot of Torah from the Rav on this. Halacha L'maisa, it's very hard to do. I do not recommend it. But we were able to do it in Maplewood, South Orange. I was the rabbi. I was a dominant figure there. I built the shul from the ground so I could get away with it in dignity. But it gave me a chance to do all of Shmon Esrei and to concentrate. Now, what's amazing, you know, when you go through the whole Shmon Esrei, you go through all the psukim, so I don't have to explain to Victor Dove, you know what the psukim mean? But you think to yourself, can this really happen? Can this really come true? Can this be real? Could I be privileged to see it? And you know, in our lifetimes, we have visions and dreams and expectations, and we study and we know and we learn. And do we really see it? Do we really can say, wow, we're seeing miracles before our eyes? With that introduction, my wife and I, who are both, I'm a Litvak to begin with, my wife comes from Hasidic stock, but she's more rational than I am, so you get the message. May 1980, and here I'm going to be very brief, anyone interested can read my book, From Washington Avenue to Washington Street. Anyone who reads Matan Hebrew, I would suggest, instead of reading my book, reading the book the Mossad put out, B'netiva de Mama, where you'll meet Aaron and Malka Rakefet. In May of 1980, the Mossad contacts me and asks me a simple question. Harav Rakefet, anachni yodim shata yodeich lelameid gemara, achim ata mukhan lelameid gemara b'moskva. And I answered, without going into detail now, I answered, yes, there was a reason why, and that began a sea change in our lives. And of course, Baruch Hashem was Matzliach in Moscow, and I wound up being responsible for the study of Talmud in the Sirivnik community. And Malka and I had to enlist over 200 people who we sent to Moscow, including a young man who was sitting here, known to you as Yitz, known to others as Rabbi Yitzchak Rubin. And just last night, Yitz, I had occasion, I was at the Katzavs, that's another family I sent, Professor Ronen Katzav. Do you recognize the name? Greek and Latin, very knowledgeable. Kol HaTorah Kula, Greek and Latin. Right, his mother is 102, 103 years old today. That's his father was editor of the Biblical Journal. So he told me last night the most intense few weeks in his life were the weeks he spent in Russia. I think Yitzchak will agree, we'll all agree that it was an unbelievable experience, and the frightened stiff, and the KGB, and the search, and the fear, and the knock on the door. And here you're teaching people, many of the people I taught later become prisoners of Zion. I happen, Yuli Edelstein, he knows, I trust he still remembers, even though he became a famous politician. But I know he was very Makia Tova. We smuggled in, don't ask, food, money, the instructions, prisoners of Zion, the fear, the people want to leave, want to be Jewish, and they can't. And if you have a bar mitzvah in synagogue, you'd be arrested. Forbidden to teach a kid under 18 about religion, it's considered coercion, religious coercion. Okay, one of the things when we came back, you come back, the first time I went, January 1981, when I came back, Malka and I were shell-shocked. And one of the things, you didn't know what to do first. So we undertook a number of projects. And one project, I got involved with a few other people in organizing a Russian outreach center called Shvut Ami. The idea behind Shvut Ami began in this building. I analyzed why was BMT so successful. Everyone talks about the late BMT, they miss. I said, there's nothing to miss. BMT was so successful, it put itself out of business, and we have endless institutions that learn from BMT, but what, including Torah Tracker in this very building. Sitting in this room is a Talmud of mine from BMT a few years ago. What, when were you in BMT? 83. That's a Johnny come lately. David Goldis, a Holocaust survivor from Hollywood. He just came out of the Hollywood fiasco. God have mercy, what happened in there. You know, eight Jews died and the senior citizens. It's, wow. So, what was the success in BMT? It was teaching Torah in English to Anglos with their mentality. And a guy like Rakefid, who came in Eilat in 69, I fell into the first faculty of BMT, the first class, 69, 10 students. And what was the secret? What did I possess that made me a better Rebbe than an Israeli? All right, I can match an Israeli in learning, let's say. I'm not going to say I don't know how to learn. I'm a Talmud of the Rav. I'll match him. But I had one advantage. I knew baseball. He knew soccer. Soccer doesn't speak. Chief Rabbi Lau can give you the soccer team, the starting lineup for Tottenham in 1960-61. He'll give you the starting lineups of every English soccer team. They ruled the world then. All right, to an American kid that doesn't speak, but when you start talking about Joe DiMaggio and Ted Williams and Stan Musial, Hagadolim and Shabaritz, oh, the kid has new respect for his Rebbe. Well, Rebbe's one of the boys, what he knows. So I said, we have to teach Russians in Russian. And from Shvut Ami we began, and it's unbelievable. I'm not the only organizer. I'm not taking all the credit. I'm taking part of the credit. There was Prisoner of Zion Shimon Gullius. There was Rabbi Lazer Kugel, should live and be well, Rabbi Levine's grandson-in-law. Wonderful people. And the idea was to produce rabbis, teachers, mechanchim, books in Russian, Russian mentality for Russians. Of course, for many years we functioned in the underground. And then the miracle happened, which is really a miracle. The communist empire fell basically without a shopping fight. There were a few Yeltsin, there were a few, if you remember, a few guns were fired. That was it. Communist empire fell. And Gorbachev allows the Jews out, 1 million come to Israel, 1.5 million. Another 500,000 wind up in America or in England, in Australia, South Africa, all over. What a miracle. But then a bigger miracle happened. Within Russia itself, Chabad started to go to work, and Chabad was indigenous to Russia. You have to understand, St. Petersburg is where the first Rebbe was arrested, where the first Rebbe was released from jail, was in prison. St. Petersburg, Leningrad, that's the story of Chabad, Yud-Tet Kislev, what we spoke about yesterday, Einis Rachmana Patre. So, Chabad got to work. Shvut Ami got to work. There are hundreds of thousands of Jews left in Russia. And a miracle has happened there. Part of the miracle, and here I have to pay homage, is the most powerful man in the world today. A man who's, I would say, hated in the Western world. His name is Putin. Putin is an Ohev Yisrael of the First Order. And he speaks about it. There's no secret. His story is very simple. And this is something none of you saw except yours truly. And yes, I believe you saw it too. When we were working in Russia during the communist era, you visited Jews. I remember Gorodetsky, one of the famous refuseniks from Leningrad. He shares an apartment with a Goya KGB informer. In other words, they were so poor in Russia. This is what brought the communist empire down. Pesach HaKol was a Potemkin's village. They were so poor that you had one family in one bedroom, another family in another bedroom, a common kitchen and a common lavatory, bathroom, shower, whatever, bathtub. Unbelievable. Putin's family shared an apartment with a Jewish family. Not just a Jewish family, but a Chabad family. And you have to remember, Chabad was always in Russia. The Rebbe would tell people not to go out, to remain there, teach Yiddishkeit. Endless Chabadnikim were executed by Stalin. Many Chabadnikim were sent to Siberia and died there. A prime example, the seventh Rebbe's father, Reb Levi Yitzchak, died in exile in the greater Siberian area. So they paid a very heavy price, but they remained. So here you have Putin growing up in St. Petersburg, Leningrad as it was called, under the communists, and he's growing up. He's in one bedroom and the next bedroom is a Chabad family. How did this affect him? More than that, the mother was a Yiddish mama. Putin's parents were dedicated communists. Now, you never saw dedicated communists. I saw them. Their eyes were burning. Halavai, we would believe in Yiddishkeit like they believed in communism. You can't believe it. With their medals on Sunday. And during the week, they worked not for money. You are from the capitalist world. No one here is going to work if you don't get paid. They worked, they got medals. The money, everyone got paid the same. A doctor, a street cleaner. Ah, they never came home. 9 o'clock they got home. So the lady next door would say to the little Putin, did you eat yet, Volvo? His name is Vladimir. I think in Russian the diminutive is Volvo. Did you eat supper yet? No, my parents are coming home at 9. Come, you'll eat with us. Putin at the World Conference of Jewish Organizations or the Russian Conference of Jewish Federations, whatever it's called, he spoke and broke down and cried. He spoke about Shabbos, how he would hear Kiddush, how his neighbor would be learning Tanakh and learning Mishnah. He says, I know what Gemara is, he says. Putin's boasting, he says, he showed me Gemara when I was a teenager. Now this neighbor, what did he do for a living? He was the wrestling coach of the high school where Putin went. Now, all of you know Putin. How does he like to pose? Without a shirt, strong, muscular. This was his coach. He loved him. He cried at the funeral. More than that, when Putin came to Israel 2 years ago, you remember he went to the Kotel and the newspapers. So he gives an order for the embassy, Russian embassy in Tel Aviv, to buy an apartment for this woman he visited. He visits this Jewish woman who came in Aliyah in the mid-90s, and he was not happy with her apartment. And he gave an order, he said, I'm not leaving. When I leave in 2 days, I want to sign the contract for the apartment, and you're to move her. She shouldn't have to lift the book. So at the press conference, at the end of his visit, this was headlines in every Israeli paper, they asked Putin, who's this woman? Her name is Minna Berliner. And Putin says, if not for this woman, I would be a gangster today, not the president of the Russian Republic. So they did their research. It turned out she was his third grade teacher. And he was an only child, parents who were never home. He was wild. And she had that unbelievable impact. I mean, I meet students, again, in the Yosef, I have to be honest with you, in the Kollel, you guys want to influence me, not vice versa. You understand? I know it's in your mind, but this is a Rebbe. You should be with a white shirt, a big beard, payas, a bekesher, should have referred to himself in third person, etc., etc. But I taught, when I started teaching, I taught elementary, then high school, then when I taught kids in the 60s in Yeshivas Chanan in New York, until today, I'm like this with many of my students because I influenced their life. This lady changed Putin's life. And Taka, he bought her a beautiful apartment in North Tel Aviv and they moved her. So Putin, you have to say, encouraged as well. I found out that Mina Berliner, I found out just now, she's an anical of a very prominent Chabad family. She never married, devoted her whole life to teaching. Now, Shvutami, over the years, I lent my name to fundraising. Whatever I could do for Shvutami, for instance, right here, there are books that anyone who doesn't have and is interested in having, I'll give away a gift at the end of the class. So my publications, a good deal of it now, I'm only going to publish Shvutami. Why? Because if I publish a book on my own, I have to deal with a publisher robs me blind. You can't believe the stories I will tell you about my experience with publishers. And I'll go to court, what, for $1,000, I'm going to besmirch my name. Publish for Shvutami. That carton raised tens of thousands, if not over $100,000 already. So over the years, I raised a lot of money for Shvutami. So Shvutami wanted me to see what their money is doing in Russia. I had as much desire to go back to Russia as Professor Tarakin has now to dance a Kazatska in Red Square. You follow? All right, you can dance a Kazatska. You have to do it in Red Square, particularly when the Chinese delegation is observing you. All right. They bothered me, they bothered my wife. Finally, we went back right when we finished teaching this past June. And what we saw is beyond comprehension. And it shows you what Jews can achieve, what we can achieve, what we can do. Little people, I have a role in this, a share. There are many others. But a little kid from the Bronx, who am I? What am I? And look what we achieved. All right, here we are standing in front of Red Square. What you notice how different Red Square is, this is in June, so look the way we're dressed. It gives you an idea how cold Moscow is even in June. But it's not winter. It's not like when we were there in 80, 80, 85, 89. No soldiers marching back and forth. That already gives you an idea of change. Go ahead, Mori. Okay. Two people who came and helped our trip, and Rabbi Kugel is a great-great-grandson of Rabbi Yehiel Levine. He is in charge of all the money. In other words, we raise every year over $1 million, quite a bit more than $1 million, and it goes into what's going on in Israel, where we have where Yomo is right now, Gachman, Yosef Mordechai Gachman. I kicked him out of my classes. It's time he went into the big world, and he's in Shvutami now, learning with Russians in Russian. In addition, he was learning over the internet with students in the Ukraine. One of those students has just come to Israel today. He's meeting Yomo today. So that's Rabbi Kugel in charge of the money. Rabbi Yaakov Baum, very fascinating individual, big Talmud Chacham, born in Israel, raised in South America. He is an educational genius. He is in charge of all of Shvutami's operations in 14 different locations in the former Soviet Union. Okay, so they came to be with us and show us around in Moscow. Go ahead. Okay, so Malk and I had some of you know, again, I apologize for, I don't mean to boast, but I do have a mitzvah that no one in this class has, and even Charlie in Baltimore, you're not going to find too many people who can say they have this mitzvah. You can ask your brother. We have a mitzvah of pidgin shvuyim. The first person we met, our first contact in Russia, and this is all directed by the Mossad, we had a meet with someone named Elia Esas. And read Washington. I produced the documents there. It took us 5 years, but Malkin and I got Esas out of Russia, the whole family. I got to Bronfman, and Bronfman kol hakavod to his memory, a man who really didn't have much Jewish knowledge, and his grandfather was a frum Jew. But Bronfman, the grandson, was an assimilated Canadian billionaire. And in a deal to that, the Seagrams, that's Bronfman's, which sell the Stolchanaya vodka, if I'm pronouncing it right, that we're talking hundreds of millions of dollars involved, Bronfman, due to Rakefet's pressure, put a Tanay in that the whole deal is contingent upon the Esas family being released. And believe it or not, Kachavei, I could spend the rest of the 2 hours talking about it, but it's not for now. Okay, now, so what Mark and I wanted to get out of our system, we wanted to go back to Esas's house, which was the first house in which I really taught Torah in 1980. And all the people I sent, Esas was your starting point. Sokol Street. That was the stop on the subway. We went back. This was an achievement. Go ahead. Oh, that picture, that Sokol Street, that's the subway. If we would have taken that picture in 1981, 85 or 89, we would have been in jail. We would have been headlines in the New York Times. Can anyone tell me why? The metro was run by the military. You were not allowed to take any picture of a military installation. So here we are, 2017, taking the picture and laughing. Hundreds of that, the subway, I mean the Moscow metro makes the New York subway look, it's like comparing what's the car they make in Germany, the little car, a Beetle, Volkswagen Beetle, to a town and country Chrysler sedan, you understand? This is the Chrysler sedan, the metro in Moscow. Go ahead. That's the building of the house, a tremendous building with many entrances. That's the entrance where the Esas's lived. Go ahead. That tells you entrance number 4, apartments 90 to 119. He was apartment 91. The Jews lived either on the first floor or very high, because those were the least desirable apartments. The first floor, obviously, for fear of robbery, and very high, if the elevator breaks, how do you walk up 20 flights? Go ahead. That's Malka at the door. That's the door I began teaching. We got into the apartment building. A lady walked out. She saw us standing there, opened the door, smiled. I mean, it's unbelievable that a communist, no one looked at each other and was afraid to talk. They were worried this is a KGB agent. And here, let us in. We didn't want to go further. Obviously, we didn't want to bother the family. But it was just to see the door, and all the memories came back. Go ahead. Whoever would have think they would see a sign like that? This is the Fleischiger restaurant. This restaurant is in the museum, which we'll come to and talk about. It's Fleischig restaurant, and on the side is state-of-the-art Milchik restaurant. You can't believe where you are. There are about 5 kosher restaurants in Moscow today. There are 3 kosher supermarkets, and in place of 1 synagogue that the KGB sanctioned, they used the word functioning synagogue, there are 16 today, and they say every few months there'll be another synagogue. Why? Because we'll talk about this later, time permitting, Balei Tshuva come out of the woodwork. Jews come out of the woodwork. And then they don't want to ride on Shabbos, so they open a synagogue in their neighborhood. They're 16 today. Go ahead. Now, this is a very funny picture. This is at the main synagogue, the Akapova synagogue, the Choral synagogue, the one synagogue that used to function. So they now have a restaurant on the side of the synagogue. So Yanky Kugel orders fish, but he never dreamt the fish would come back whole. In other words, they're serving it. Look, you're looking at the whole fish. It's not filleted. In America, you're never going to see fish like here. Here, some people do get it. But he looked at it. He was afraid to eat it. The fish looks like it's still alive. And my wife said, he said, my wife will never believe it if I tell her I ate a fish like this. So Malka said, we're going to take a picture and send it to her. And we titled the picture, Kugel and Fish. It's Yankee Kugel and Fish. Go ahead. That's here. This is, look on the, look what that says. Shrika Kogan Group. One of the most impressive people I met in Russia, and you'll see him later, is Yitzchak Kogan. Yitzchak Kogan is a very interesting story. He comes from an old-time Chabad family. He was the heart of the religious Tsarivnikim in Leningrad. Yitzchak was a shochet. His wife, Zichrona Levracha, Sophia, was a tzaddeket. He would go in the middle of the night, he had an old jalopy, no one had a car under the communist, would go in the middle of the night, I saw once, he would hire goyim, strong goyim, the middle of the night they'd go to a village, buy a cow, all this had to be surreptitiously when the KGB was asleep, buy a cow, the goyim would hold the cow down, that's the biggest problem when you shecht. If you read my work, the Silver Era, you know what I'm talking about, the holding pen. Hold the cow down, he would shech, bring the cow back, his wife would kasha, he would cut it up and she would kasha, and they would distribute to all the people who wanted kosher meat. It's unbelievable. Yitzchak comes to Israel and he has 15 grandchildren living here, so I'm not mad at him for leaving Israel. He did the army here, she was a dentist here, and they called him back to Moscow, you'll see later. In Moscow, he trained 16 young Chabadnikim, Shchita. And that's what you see, Shchita Kogan Group. 80% of the Shchita in the Russia today is done by his Shchaitim. So that's a kosher, that's a store facing a beautiful park, and it's kosher meat, his Shchita. Go ahead. This is unbelievable. Those of you who were in Russia under the communists, so Chabad had a little shul in a very fancy area, Marina Rucha. And that was what the area was called. And it was a little, a two-story, I have pictures of this from the 80s, a two-story building. The under Brezhnev already, and when we were there, after Brezhnev, they didn't close it down. Their attitude was, let the Chabadnikim have a place. And the KGB agents were there. It was not official. It was not publicized. But they were there. A little two-story building. This Shaarei Tzedek building stands exactly where the Marina Rothschild shul stood. The shul today, we'll see shortly, is a seven-story state-of-the-art building built by the Russian government. This building, because it was Marina Rucha, is entirely dedicated to tzedaka. In this building, you have Tomchei Shabbos for poor families, something you all recognize. Psychologists, social workers, medical doctors who volunteer Jews to help members of the Jewish community. Clothing, what we saw in that building, and that's called Merkaz HaChesed HaYehudi B'Moskva Shaarei Tzedek Ashrei Ayin Ra'atazot. Okay, go ahead. Okay. Now, could you imagine, this is Moscow. When you look at the picture, you could say, well, it's YU, it's America, it's Young Israel of Hollywood, and Florida. These are, there's a Sudami teacher. Now, I have to tell you, in all of Russia, non-Chabad, 90% of the teachers are either Shvatami graduates or children of Shvatami graduates. Even in, or students of Shvatami graduates. Even in Chabad, where they have endless young people from Kfar Chabad, you will find on a higher level, it's all Shvatami graduates. Our biggest problem is one woman yelled at me. She said, I want to go back. I need a Salam Zalaret. She's a Russian raised in Israel, married a Shvita Mirav. He's teaching there. She's vice principal of the day school. But she said, we're here already 3 years. You see, the Chabadnikim, as we spoke about over the years, when Chabadnikim go, they go for life. That is a big advantage. When our people go, they want to come back to Israel. I don't blame them. With everything you have in Moscow, it's not Israel. So we're working on it. We have all types of plans. If we had endless money, we would send teachers for a month, have someone, an understudy teacher, let them take over when you're gone, talk with you daily, guide them, and you come back a few months later. But that takes a lot of money. But here, this is Torah Mitzion. Torah Mitzion is a building on the other side of the Great Synagogue, entirely dedicated to outreach teaching Torah. You want to know who pays for it? Two partners, the Misrad HaChinuch of Russia and the Misrad HaChinuch of Israel. I'll show it to you later. Unbelievable. And look at those kids. Some of them become total Shomrei Shabbos. Go ahead. Here are kids putting on tzitzit for the first time. And these are Russian kids, typical Russian kids. Are they all Jewish? No, some are not. This is Rabbi Goldschmidt. Malk and I have another mitzvah there. It doesn't compare to Pidgin Shvuyim. But Pinchas Goldschmidt was a student in Neir Yisrael. He's from Switzerland. His father was a Rebbe in Switzerland, active in Agudat Yisrael. And he was in Neir Yisrael. And as a teenager, he comes to our house. I can't go into all the details now. But we inspired him at the age of 17. He went back to Neir Yisrael. He winds up getting smicha. And he is one of the leading rabbis in Moscow today. He is the Av Beit Din in charge of Gerit, Yibun, Chalitza, Gittin. That's his domain. So when you have a kid where the father is Jewish and the mother is not, we arrange conversion.
Is the Rabbanut of Israel
recognized? 100%. Pinchas is totally reliable. Yeah, go ahead. Okay. Now, here, when you talk about not being Jewish or becoming Jewish, these are two kids ready for Brit Milah. And you know how many in the state of Israel, in every hospital, you can have Brit Milah free of charge. I think the figure is over 150,000 Russians, adults, got Milah. Who does the Milah? Religious doctors in every hospital volunteer. They do a mitzvah. And what happens is, the Brit Milah here is generally at 5 o'clock in the afternoon. It's done. When they finish their rounds, they do the Milah and they have a L'chaim. It's very beautiful, integrated in every hospital in the state of Israel. This is in Moscow. Okay, they're now going to have Milah. Go ahead, you'll see. Here they are in the hospital already. This has to be after the Milah. Two individuals at their age, they look Jewish, they can be totally Jewish, but they never had a Brit Milah. That's what I spoke about yesterday with Lapid. When you pick up yesterday's shiur, you'll understand what I'm saying. Go ahead. Can you believe it? Here we are in Moscow. Here we are in public. Here we are, two Jewish youngsters who knows how assimilated their parents are. And here, Jewish 100%. Notice what's on the table. Anyone who was there under the Russians, there was absolutely no food in Russia. What you had, if it was the season where they could grow apples, and remember Russia is very cold, hundreds of thousands, millions of little apples that in Israel they couldn't sell. There were never oranges. They imported them from Morocco. Oh, what it meant. I remember people standing online around the corner. No one worked in Russia. You left your job. You heard their oranges. We saw this tremendous line. We said to Essas, what are they standing there for? They're waiting to buy a kilo of oranges. I said, what are you playing games? He took us around to the front when they're walking out. Yevan Shtupan, he's walking out with a little package and rolled up in newspaper. He got some oranges. The food in Moscow was as good as Israel today. Go ahead. This is Marina Rothschild today. It's a 7-story building, state of the art. In this building, this is the center of Chabad. This is where Rabbi Lazar sits, who is of American origins. His father, can anyone tell me, his father was one of the early shluchim of the Rebbe. This is the early 50s. Zev, are you familiar with this history? With Lazar? The Rebbe, when he went to leave for Milano, the Rebbe came out of 770 and walked along the cab. For one block, the cab went slowly, and the Rebbe walked along the cab. This is one of the early shluchim. His parents, he was raised in Italy. He speaks fluent Russian. He's Putin's spiritual leader. Putin relates to him literally as, you know, most people today have no faith. Faith is over. In England, too. They look at the chief rabbi, the queen, considered Rabbi Jakubowicz. Her spiritual leader was Rabbi Jakubowicz. Same thing with Putin and Lazar. Now, in this building, you have a tremendous shul. That's the heart of the building. In addition, you have everything imaginable. Svarim, I walked in, I couldn't believe my eyes. Hundreds of different Svarim, all Russian translations. Couldn't believe my eyes what I saw. Some of it was work we did in Shvat Ami when we were trailblazers in the 80s. Today, everything is available. A printing press, classrooms, jewelry, kosot, Havdalah sets, artwork. The building is like a museum dedicated to Yiddishkeit. Go ahead. In the building, beautiful paintings, all by Russian artists. As you walk through, you can take the elevator, but if you walk on the steps, every level, different art. The middle of the day, there's a Chabadna teaching retirees. This was in the middle of the day, a class for retirees. I mean, in public, what went on before, it's a new world. Go ahead. Okay, let's explore Jewish Moscow. Go ahead. This is a block away from the shul. This is the most modern Jewish museum in the world. At this moment in time, there is nothing in Israel that equals it. And the Wiesenthal Center, if you've been there, and it's named Museum and Tolerance Center, which is a play on the Wiesenthal Center, it is second rate by far. What can I tell you about the museum? It's the history of the Jewish people. Matan Torah, Yetziat Mitzrayim, you sit in your chair, the chair shakes, you put on 3D glasses, you see the Esam Makot coming right at you. You cross the Yam Suf, you're sprayed by water, and this is all Yitzchak, all in Russian. And the girl guiding it, dressed sneistically, the Chabadnikim who were there, invite her for Shabbos. You can see the outreach. And I have to tell you, following what I said yesterday, no messianicism whatsoever. Totally normal. Underline the word normal. Totally normal. But there's much, much more to the museum. It's a history of the Jews in Russia, the persecution under the communists, the Siberian cells that Gedolei Yisrael were exiled to, Chabadnikim executed, World War II, the contribution of the Jews, the whole overthrow of communism, and the rebuilding of Yiddishkeit, all there, black and white. Now, where do you get the money? That building is one square block. Where do you get the money? First of all, this state of Russia. Secondly, the city of Moscow. Thirdly, Jewish oligarchs who became millionaires when communism fell. And believe it or not, Putin, one of the main contributors to the Jewish Museum. You have to see the plaque and one of the names, there it is. Putin gave a month's salary, Russian government, to the museum. The museum is guarded. Go ahead, I'll show you in a second. So now that's Malka going into the museum. When you open up that door, on the other side are Russian guards, metal detectors. This is at every Jewish institution, every synagogue. All the protection is paid for by the Russian government. The Jewish people do not have to spend a penny. It is all covered by the Russian government. Putin, go ahead. Here I am in the museum. That's a babushka. And they're showing you pictures of Russian intellectuals. They're trying to catch the 19th century. That's in the 19th century division. And by the way, the babushkas, if you remember how they were dressed under the communists, even they are dressed much better today. The whole level of living is, I can't say it's equal to the United States, but it's certainly equal to what you see in Manhattan and Queens on the street, 100%. Whether it's equal to Lawrence, maybe a few areas, but not more. Go ahead. Now, here we are. The only person you haven't met is the one on the extreme left. That's Natan, Rav Natan. He is a Shvatami graduate. He was born in Moscow. And we had, he was assigned to be with Malka and myself. He would pick us up at the hotel. And we were like youngsters. We were on the go from 7:30 in the morning till 11 o'clock at night, 11:30 at night. Because of him, we could do everything we had to do because he knew exactly how to go. He would make the decisions if we go by a cab, if we go by metro, go by bus, avoid the tremendous pekakim, how do you say pekakim in English? Traffic jams, tremendous traffic jams in Moscow. Everyone has a car today. He loves it in Moscow. He's back home with the soccer, with the team, like Rakefet with the Yankees, you understand? And his wife yelled at me, I want to go back to Israel. And our conversations had a big impact on my second public shiur in Moscow, which was overwhelming for some of, if I have time, I'll tell you later. Now, the tank is very interesting. My grandchildren, who I've had some of the tank corps, so my grandchildren immediately identified the tank and told me the story of the tank. That tank was invented by a Jew. It was very easy to put together. It is the tank that saved the world. That is the tank that defeated Hitler when he tried to enter Moscow in 1942. This tank and General Winter, it was the worst winter ever recorded. Men Hashemayim, God saved us because the German army never experienced a winter like 42. Why was that tank so important? Very easy to put together. So even though they would lose 100 in battle every month, they could manufacture 1,000. So that's the story of that tank, and that Jew was very famous for what he achieved. The woman you see there with all the medals, she was a night witch. These were women, and these were all Jewish women, many pictures on the wall. They flew airplanes, vintage World War I. There was no night sight yet. It's not like today when a battlefield, I've been on battlefields and I know what my son-in-law did in the army. If you recall yesterday, Morty, I said neither you nor he nor I could get a place security today. You know what my son-in-law did in the Israel army, twice won the highest award possible, night sight. And he brought me home equipment. He showed me you can light up the night. It's lighter than daylight. Then it was totally dark. And these night witches bombed the Germans as they approached Moscow, night after night after night. So there's a whole display there. Go ahead. And it's very interesting. That's the German word which represents, it means I. Who am I? That's the interpretation. Who pronounced it correctly?
Yeah.
Yeah. And it means I, and it's like the father passing on to the kid, who are you? Think about it. It's artwork, post-communist, right in the museum. Go ahead. All right, this is the worst picture. I refuse to stand there. That is a replica of a cell that Mendelovich, Sharansky, etc., Edelstein, they were in cells like this. That's exactly the size, what was there, when we two people shared it. And when we showed it here in Israel to some of the names I just mentioned, they commented it was even smaller than the replica in the museum. That's Rabbi Baum standing there. I said, I'm not standing there. Okay, go ahead. This is the Choral Synagogue. Now, here, if you see the street, that's on Chapova Street. And on that street, every Saturday night, all the refuseniks, hundreds and hundreds, would gather in the freezing cold and pass on information, who got a visa, who got a refusal, and the KGB. I have movies of it taken by the German TV in 1979. The KGB agents, police, would be walking up and down right on that street outside the synagogue. You'll see why I'm telling you this in a minute. Go ahead. Okay. Here we are standing in front of the entrance to the synagogue. Can anyone tell me why that entrance is so famous? That entrance plays a big role in modern Jewish history. That's where Golda Meir stood, second day Rosh Hashanah, 1948, Ein Zekim Beit Elokim, and thousands and tens of thousands of Jews gathered around her. And Stalin went ballistic that the Jew still remembers he's Jewish. That's when he hatched the doctor's plot. That's when he killed all the Jewish intellectuals. And that's when he came up with the idea of sending the Jews to a concentration camp in Siberia. Go ahead. Okay, take a look. There's the sign. Can anyone tell me what's wrong with that sign? This is Johnny Come Lately put up recently. The original sign was smaller, was wooden, and I have a picture of Malkin and myself in front of the original sign in 1981, which was exactly the way it looked when Golda Meir, the famous picture of Golda Meir, it's that exact wooden Ein Zekim Beit Elokim. Go ahead. That's the inside of the synagogue, totally refurbished. Beautiful. This is one of the minyanim for, I think they were davening mincha. We had already davened mincha, and they were davening mincha here. But this was one of many minyanim during the day in the great synagogue. Go ahead. Okay, so this used to be the only synagogue. Today there's 16. Go ahead. Ah, can anyone tell me what that is? Right where the refusnikim demonstrated, that's right opposite the synagogue, Rehov Achapova, the city of Moscow. What did they build there? A mini kota. You don't have to go to Borough Park, to Rav Menashe Klein Shul, to see a mini kotel. Here is the kotel in Moscow, right opposite the great synagogue. David, when are you going to build a mini kotel in Young Israel of Hollywood to remind the people where they're from and where they should be going? But more than that, Yitzchak, what do you see behind the mini kotel? You see the trees? There's a park. You know what happens to that park in a few weeks? The city of Moscow builds two tremendous sukkot for the Jews who come to daven in the main synagogue. Remember, they don't have sukkot. Where are they going to build? They don't live in private homes. They live in tremendous buildings. Take a look what's happened on Achapova Street. This says it all. Go ahead. Okay. Now, this is Yitzhak Kogan in a different area of Moscow where he reigns supreme. The story of Yitzchak is very simple. He was very happy in Israel. He's at home. He's a sheikhet. He has children here, grandchildren. A yid at tzaddik yisod olam. Met him in 1980, one of the most impressive people I've ever met in my life. I was in touch with him, 81, 85. When he comes out, I can tell you endless stories, but let me just concentrate on Moscow. He gets a call from the Jews in Moscow. Yitzchak, we need you here. What do we need? Goes to Moscow, 1992. Why do they need him? This neighborhood, which is an upscale neighborhood, Jews want a synagogue. And there was an old synagogue, 200 years old. And this synagogue was a storage area for records, for the Moscow city. Give us back the synagogue. So Yitzchak comes to Rush, he's a Hebron, and he knocks the lock off. He's arrested. Within 2 months, he gets an official document. I have actually a photograph of it in the book that he gave me in my house. He gets an official document that the Moscow city is giving back the synagogue to the Jews. So now he has a 200-year-old synagogue, dilapidated building. Oligarchs come to him out of nowhere. Rabbi Yitzchak, our grandparents, our great-grandparents davened here. Rebuild the synagogue. Here's $1 million. No, one oligarch gives $1 million, another one gives $1 million, a third gives $1 million, a fourth gives $1 million. He rebuilds a 5-story glass state-of-the-art building with an automatic Shabbos elevator right on top of the old synagogue that he refurbishes. Now we're standing in Beit Menachem. There are 5 synagogues in the building. He has Chabad, Ashkenaz, Svad, Kafkaz, Bukharin. You can't believe what's going on in every floor. Social halls, catering, display cabinets. Okay, go ahead. But here, Malka wants everyone to listen carefully, particularly anyone who does not have Israeli citizenship. That's the shul. And Yitzchak says to us, go closer to the Oren Kodesh. We walk closer to the Oren Kodesh and we see a shatiach, a carpet. They figure it's Birchat Kohanim. He does Birchat Kohanim every day. No, he says, lift up the shatiach. See what we saw under the shatiach? You pull up the shayish. What do you see there? An escape hatchet. My dear students, that escape hatchet is 200 years old. When there was a pogrom, the Jews went down and came out a mile away. Well, I want to tell you, that was overwhelming. I showed the picture to my nephew. You all know my nephew, famous oral surgeon, Dr. Zev Rothkopf. So Zev says to us, that's nothing. When I learned the Nachalim, he went to high school there. He said the teachers used to give talks and bore us to death. We had an escape hatchet from the Palmach when the British came there, and we went out. But he said, then one problem developed. The Rebbeim learned what we were doing. So you went out the escape hatchet. You got a block away, you came out a happy kid, you ran away from the Rebbe's Musa, and there was a different Rebbe catching you by the neck as you came out. Okay, Malka says every shul in Gullah should have an escape hatchet. My wife is a bigger Zionist than I am, I have to tell you. She voted for Meir Kahan every election. I'm a Kahachnik, but I always said, in the election you vote Maftal in those days. You don't want to waste your vote. Go ahead. They have something? Skate patch. Now, he had so much money.
What? That was for slaves.
Yeah.
What? For slaves.
Could be slaves used it too.
In case of an Indian attack.
An Indian attack. Or whatever. Listen to, he had so much. Yitzchak Kogan had so much money. You know what he built there? That's a menorah ready to go into the base of Migdash, built according to Shita Tarambam. Okay? Look at the way it's built. Compare it to Rashi. You'll understand what I'm talking about. Go ahead, Morty. This is unbelievable. The Russian government, Putin, was so impressed by what Yitzhak did, they gave him an award that's an ancient sword bedecked by jewels given to a sheikhet. Now, more than that, look on the wall in back of him. You know who you see there? That's the Tzemach Tzedek, the third Lubavitcher Rebbe. The Jew who owned it was already assimilated, but he was a great-great-grandson. So he gave it to Yitzchak, and he said, I don't want it to leave Russia. When I was in 770, what I spoke about yesterday, they show me a picture. They tell me it's a copy. But maybe you can ask your friend Yitzchak, give it to us. We want it at 770. So I told them, they knew. They were pulling my leg. They knew that the person who gave it to Yitzchak made it tonight. It cannot leave Russia. Go ahead. Okay, go ahead. Now this gives you the details that the Chabad, under the auspices of Chief Rabbi Beryl Lazar, they service 60% of the community. Non-Chabad Chief Rabbi Pinchas Goldschmidt, 30-35%. The Bronanya Synagogue Center, that's the name of the Yerv Kogan, it's 5-10%. But this is very important. There is no competition between these communities. Chabad ultimately attracts those who want to be Chabad. And those who don't are attracted to the other organizations. And what the... No. See, it didn't catch on. And I'll tell you. Did I tell it in class? I don't want to waste time. But Rabbi Shaiowitz. You know, anyone, the name Rabbi Adolf Shaiowitz, play it to anyone's ears. The rabbi, the last rabbi under the communist of the great choral synagogue was Rabbi Adolf Shaiowitz. Rabbi Shaiowitz was ordained in Budapest, in the one rabbinic seminary that functioned under the communist. It was Neolag. Neolag is the fancy word for what we would call conservative Judaism. It was run by Rabbi Schreiber, descendant of the Chatam Sofer, but they were Neolag. Whatever that meant, some were more from, some less. It was what you would call traditional, but not orthodox. So when the Iron Curtain fell, and I asked Rabbi Goldschmidt to verify it, he said, Rebbe, you have it 100% right. Well, I knew the story, but I wanted it verified. Well, I'm not an eyewitness. When the Iron Curtain fell, again, the conservative, they want recognition, like what's going on now. Imagine an Orthodox rabbi says, Eilu v'eilu divrei Elokim. I'm still shaking with fear that a Talmud of the Rav can talk that way. Or a Talmud of the Rav can say, if Rabbi Soloveitchik were alive, he would be in favor of women rabbis. It's beyond comprehension for me as a Talmud of the Rav. So the conservative came to Shaiowitz and put heavy money on the table. You're a graduate of Budapest. You're Neolog. You're one of us. Declare this to be a conservative temple. And he refused. I have tremendous derech eretz for that individual. I have pictures of myself with him from 89. Tremendous derech eretz. How many rabbanim do you know when you put a few hundred grand on the table and tell you, take it and forget it, we can't be bought. Rabbi Goldschmidt certified the story. Rabbi Shaiowitz today is an older gentleman, and they get along very well. Rabbi Goldschmidt is the Avbeistin, he's the Rav of the Shul, they get along very well. But more important is that there's no competition. You see, Chabad can reach out to the masses. I've said this 1,000 times, I'm a Litvak, I have to raise my hands and surrender. We cannot reach out to the masses. To be the way I was raised, it's much harder. I'm Bucky and Shasim Paiskim, giant of Torah, learned, knowledgeable. But the masses, Chabad went out, Chassidus went out. In Moscow, there's Kalev Yisrael. Everything is manufactured there. 50 plants under Hashkacha. The biggest candy plant in all of the former Soviet Union, owned by a Jew, came to the rabbinate there years ago and said, I want to be a good Jew. How do I make my plant kosher? And the whole plant was kashered 100%. Could you imagine? And all the candy with Hashkacha. And he himself became, they call me a Shomer Shabbos. And Chabad. Cholav Yisrael, bottled, beautiful, cartons. I say, how many Jews want Cholav Yisrael? The Shvatami crowd is Litvish. They're not Makpid in Cholav Yisrael. They tell me over 1,000 families in Moscow are Makpid in Cholav Yisrael. So you say, that's Chabad. You got to give credit. But they get along. You want Chabad? You want Chabad? Litvish? Shvatami, we built a whole shul, a whole different area. What a library, what svarim, what learning, with a kollel, with serious learning. That's for Shvatami. You're interested in Hasidut, the masses? Shalom v'shalva. I was so happy to see it, to see the spirit, to see the kinderlach, to see the teachers. Go ahead, move on. Here. That is the Marina Rothschild Synagogue. 7 stories totally dedicated to HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the heart of Moscow, the most beautiful area. Go ahead. 10 different locations where there's outreach. This is under Rabbi Goldschmidt and Shvatami, essentially. The great synagogue Torah Mitzvah I told you about. Eitz Chaim School, which is an unbelievable achievement of a Stern College graduate who happens to be married to Rabbi Pinchas Goldschmidt. She organized the school about 30 years ago when he first came there. This school is paid for by the Russian government. It is like Australia, like England. They control the curriculum. It is Jewish Torah, like a day school. The only thing that the Jewish element has to pay for, if you have enrichment programs. In other words, if you want more Talmud, that you have to arrange on your own. The rabbi's wife, the Rebbetzin, is the principal. As I said, the Shvatami lady, who's there with her husband, assists her. The school is a block long. It's a former Russian school that the government gave them. It's now on to 1,000 students. They say they'll soon outgrow the space. The Russian government appointed a lady, Yulia, who is in charge of it. She answers to the Russian government. She's not even Jewish. But an Ohevet Yisrael of the First Order, brilliant, perfect English. Where did she spend this past summer? At Harvard University, where they have a certain teaching principles of private schools. There are many yeshiva principles there, giving them expert modern tools how to run a school in conformity with the most modern advanced science and technique, computerization, etc. Ole Yaakov is the Shvatami Shul, and Yeshiva Tar, the others are other areas that I didn't visit myself, but they're all part of the Moscow scene. Torat Chaim, you probably recognize, is a shoot-off from Rabbi Steinsaltz. Okay, go ahead. Okay, and this is true that Shvatami is an umbrella organization, meaning in all these 10 institutions, you will find teachers who are either Shvatami graduates, students of Shvatami, or married to Shvatami people. Okay, and there's 7 more countries of the former Soviet Union. Shvatami trains, provides permanent staff who live in Moscow. That is correct. And then we have Shluchim going back and forth in Israel on an ongoing basis, practice rabbis, teachers, community leaders. And that's where our problem begins. People don't want to leave Israel for more than a short period. The programs, everything we've developed, everything in Russian. That's what's so critical. Go ahead. Yeah, 70% of all 10 organizations, that includes those with Chabad overtones, are provided by Shvita Mei. Go ahead. Okay, go back. Okay, this is the Great Synagogue. Once again, you saw the first picture. The other picture is very interesting. On the side of the first synagogue, some of you will remember, was the shtibel that Chabad dominated. Today, that shtibel is an Eidat HaMizrach shul, and I was there when they were having a Sudat Hilula in memory of one of their members, and look at the food on the table. Once again, you can't believe you're in the same Russia that was once communist. Go ahead. Okay, this is the Torah Mitzion. Look at the Sfarim, get an idea of the Sfarim that are available. And these are classes going on daily for college and post-college students in Moscow. Go ahead. Here we are. This is a Shabbaton at Torah Mitzion. You see the Shvita Mei staff there in the middle. There's Yaakov Kugel. There are other people I recognize. And those are Jewish souls, boys and girls, reclaimed for Yiddishkeit. And when you look at that picture, and let's say you're looking at 60 boys and girls, think how many Jews there will be 50 years from now. All of us here, sitting here, who came in Aliyah, young people with small family, in this room alone, we have hundreds of direct descendants of the people sitting here. Go ahead. Okay, this is a Taglit program Shmuley ran for women. We run for men and women separate, and we're taking them to Israel. This is their, they've arrived at Ben Gurion Airport. Go ahead. Ah, this is very interesting. This is the Way Back, a program we're taking them to London, England. Can anyone wonder why? That's the Thames River, there's the bridge. Anyone wonder why London? One of the biggest problems we had, many of these people are seeing Yiddishkeit in Israel for the first time, real Yiddishkeit. Shabbat, Kashrut, Tarat Mishpacha, the streets are Jewish. They're going back to Moscow and they're wondering, can we be Jewish in Moscow? We grew up Goyim, Russians. We want to be Jewish Russians now. The closest place that we figured we could take them on the way back is London. Gold is Green, Hendon, Stamford Hill, Edgware. We showed them Jewish communities, people working, integrated, British citizens, productive, and good from Jews. It is possible. Go ahead. Okay, you recognize Radisson, the name of the hotel chain. That's the boat. In honor of our being there and the fact that 150 students are graduating a two-year course at the Torah Mitzion Reach Outreach Program, they hired a boat, and the entire boat was the students, their friends, the Shvita Mei people, totally glatt kosher. Go ahead. Here we are on the boat. That's Malcolm, myself. Look, a lady came over to consult with us. She has a sister living in Jerusalem. A brother in Jerusalem. A sister in Moscow. She was wearing a big mug in David. She told us her mother, she comes from the Ukraine. Her mother told her, you can wear a mug in David in Moscow, but don't you dare come back to the Ukraine wearing a mug in David in public. Once again, I call your attention, look at the food. And that's not showing the fleshic food, the hot food, what they had. It equaled anything I've seen in the U.S. or the state of Israel, Kanayin Hara. Go ahead. There's a guy I know doing the one thing in life he knows how to do with some success. Devar Hashem, look how fascinated they are by my talk. This talk is on yutorah.org. I was just, you take the words out of my mouth. I began in Hebrew, but they switched me to English. And you'll hear the talk how every few minutes I was interrupted and they explained it in Russian. Now, these kids all know basic English because they're high school graduates. Their English is probably as good as a high school graduate here in Israel. The movies they see in English, some of the television is in English. Maybe it's 90% as good as an Israeli kid. Okay, go ahead. Ah, that's the Eitz Chaim, that's the elementary school, that's the outreach school, and all that is sponsored. Take a look at the two flags. Bishituf Mishrad HaChinuch HaYisraeli uMishrad HaChinuch HaRusi. And take a look, Russia and Israel, the two flags together. There are other plaques, and there you see George Rohr is a big contributor. Kol HaKavod to George Rohr. His money is all over the place. Chabad mainly, but all over the Jewish Torah world. Go ahead. Here we are at the day school we spoke about. The lady between Malka and myself is the Rebbetzin, and she is the dean of the school. In the other picture, the lady with the blondish hair, what's that, a blue blouse, a bluish blouse, that is Julia. That is the lady who is in charge of the operation. What a Kiddush Hashem. Go ahead. Ah, this is already an Ohel Yaakov giving a shiur the next day. And here you have less people because these people are Koilil people. They're on a higher level of learning. And that's the shul that Shvut Ami built there. Sitting next to me on either side are two Lakewood yeshiva boys of Russian origins who round up in Lakewood and were sent to Russia to help in this kollel because they're Russian speakers. And I have to tell you, they were bothering me like crazy. I told them I got to give talks. I have to talk to the students. Why was I so important to them? Because I learned in Lakewood in the early 50s, and I knew Reb Aaron Cutler and the whole Lakewood scene and all the legendary names they heard about. Here is an individual who saw it with his own eyes and felt it with his own hands. Okay? Here we are. That's Yitzchak Kogan again. Go ahead. This is at Yitzchak Kogan's shul. This is the hall, and this is a seminary graduation of girls that have gotten an education like a Beis Yaakov seminary, like a Beit Rivka seminary. They're graduating. If you look at the sign on the top, that's only partial, it says Mazel Tov. That's what the sign says. Mazel Tov in Russian to these young ladies. Notice how beautiful the hall is. Notice the chairs. Notice how everyone is dressed nicely. What a difference from what was and what is. Go ahead. Okay, a great miracle in our times. Go ahead. The end. Go ahead. The end. Here's a, yeah, go ahead. All right, this is telling you the story. There are approximately 250,000 Jews. Go ahead. Ah, this means that perhaps with all that you've seen, 15 to 1,000, 20,000 are being inspired, less than 8% of the Jewish population. Go ahead. Now we can start to understand and appreciate why there is close to a 90% intermarriage rate in Moscow. Okay? We have to do more. Okay? Go ahead. We are running out of time. Okay? What would Golda Meir say? You cannot, and I'll tell you the story to Golda Meir. All right, let me endorse now. That's fine with the thank you very much, Morty. Greatly appreciated. Let me endorse. I'm finished with the slides, and we have to be able to get at the books for those who want them. Gentlemen, the story with Golda Meir is very simple. 1947, the UN Golda Meir writes this in her autobiography. The UN voted partition, and Israel knew right away that the Arabs are going to go to war with us. We desperately needed arms. There were ways to buy arms, not in America. There was an embargo, but in Eastern Europe, arms that survived World War II, etc. Money was the key. So the what you would call the cabinet, then it was the governing body of the Jewish agency, which later becomes the official government of Israel. They're sitting and meeting, and they're debating who to send to America to make the appeal. Some people say Ben-Gurion. Other people say, why Ben-Gurion? He's not a native English speaker. Golda Meir is a native English speaker. Send her. So the cabinet votes unanimously, Ben-Gurion agreeing, Golda Meir should get out of there immediately and go to the airport to go to America. So Golda Meir, she writes this, she says with a big smile, how do you want me to go without clothes? I have to go home and pack some clothes. She goes to Chicago. That was her first stop. Her goal was to raise $25 million. They set up this big meeting in Chicago, and Golda's the key part of the speech, she says, ladies and gentlemen, you can still make a decision. We cannot. We decided we're going to fight. We've made our decision. But we need your help. And it's up to you to decide whether we will win or lose, live or die. The decision is yours. Within 3 days, she raised $50 million. So, I mean, the question haunts some people, doesn't haunt me. I've answered it many times over. Look what God did for us, such a miracle. Who the heck was Golda Meir? Mother covered her hair like down to her forehead. Her father had a long beard. Ben-Gurion, who was Ben-Gurion's parents were Shomer Shabbos, who was he? And these people brought about the greatest miracle since Churban Bayit, the survival of the Jewish peoples, all the Balei Tshuva, Israel, what's happening here today. All right, you remember the Medrash I quoted to, the Medrash Rabbah, where the Medrash Rabbah raises the question, why Moshe Rabbeinu had to be raised in Paro's court. I couldn't believe the Medrash. There's a Medrash Rabbah. The Medrash Rabbah says, had he been raised among the Jews, they would have dismissed him. Well, what's he talking about? Leave Egypt, God of the miracles, what does he know? What's he, just another ignorant Jew? But when he came from the court of Paro, dressed in royalty, this man we have to listen to. He's assimilated, he's from Paro's court. And you know the miracle that Moshe Rabbeinu brought about. And we're riding that miracle until today. What's happening in Russia, if someone would tell me, I would show pictures like this in the 1880s and 1980s. I'd say, what are you, crazy? What are you, an idiot, an imbecile? Don't you have any belief? Yeah, I have belief, but you know, it's a distant thing. The Rambam, we always call it the Rambam, Perek Yud Bet, Halacha Bet, and Hilchot Malachim. We'll live, we'll see, we'll get there. Not yet. Married the Rambam. It's unbelievable. But there are two tremendous questions here. One question is, how long will this go on? It's a fair question. My wife says, prepare the escape hatchet. Excuse me. But I have to tell you, there's no question as long as Putin is in power, and it's for an American to say this, because when I came to Russia, my first question was, the Shvitami, which passport do I use? They said, what are you, crazy? You can't get in an American passport. You need a visa, with all that implies. It's your Israeli passport. They come into Russia, show my Israeli passport. They bow, they laugh, they smile. Within a second, I got into Russia quicker Then I got into New York City 2 weeks later, 3 weeks later, 2 weeks later. How long will it go on? When we left Russia, we go through the metal detector, and the lady heard me say something to Malka in Hebrew. And Russian lady, middle-aged, turns around with a big smile and says to us, Toda, thanks for coming. Toda. I couldn't believe my ears. You get on the plane, first thing they serve big kosher meals, big boxes, beautifully packed, made in Moscow, Rabbi Lazar's Hashkacha, or Rabbi Goldschmidt's Hashkacha, I don't remember, I think it was Rabbi Lazar, but maybe Rabbi Goldschmidt. How long will it last? All right, look, we have no guarantees. Do people in Russia feel that there's a real sea change? Anti-Semitism, and this, there was just an article in the papers, I think even yesterday or the day before, maybe the weekend papers, that there has been less anti-Semitism acts in Moscow than ever before since they're recording it. And they say the laws are very severe and the Russian government means business. Kids walk in the street of Moscow with kippah on, with their tzitzit flying in the air, people with beards, payas, black clothes. No one looks twice at them. They're Jews. In general, the Russian people love the Israelis. They're very proud of us because we've stood up to the world, stood up to the Arabs, stood up to the UN. There's tremendous antipathy in Russia towards the Muslims. This is one of their main problems. Unlike England and France, which no one has children today, no one believes in God, no one believes in religion, no one believes in procreation. Once they invented prophylactics or the pill, no one has children anymore. Why have children? I have relatives. My brother was telling me they decided these their great-grandparents are the same grandparents that I have. Their great-grandparents said they decided not to have children after having children. So said, well, you have sex, of course. You eat meat, you have to have sex. It's a normal physical function. So England and France have been overrun. You all know that the Muslims will take over Europe. They're taking it over already. But within 50 years, they'll be beheading people Friday afternoon after services in accordance with the Sharia. It's unbelievable what's happened there. You go to downtown England, you think you're in Saudi Arabia. France, you don't have to go to Saudi Arabia. You're right there in Morocco, Tangiers. It's Algiers, whatever. The Russians have not allowed the Muslims in. They have a real problem. Where are they going to get workers? Where are they going to get people to go to Siberia to work? Siberia has all the wealth, the mines. They pay a fortune for you to go there for a few years. Where are you going to get children? It's a real problem for them. So the Russian government today in Moscow, in Russia, like Israel, every child you get an allowance from the government. One, two, three. Three children, not only an allowance, but you get a card. You're a parent of three children. Everyone in the family rides free on the metro, on the buses, and you can park the car anywhere in Moscow and not have to pay for parking. Three children, four, five, six, seven children. They now have a new law. You get a station wagon, a gift of the Russian government. So see, they mean business. Putin is upset that Jews live here. He would like to bring back a million Jews, the Jewish mind. They know they value. They're confident it will continue. I can't say with confidence. Who knows? But then there's the second question. And here I want to end off the class with this question and propose an answer. When I came back, that Shabbat I was back, we were invited to the home of a very, very great lady. One of the greatest ladies I know. Her name originally was Chana Bunim. Recognize who she is? It's Erwin Bunim's daughter. Subsequently, she was married. Rabbi Rubin, they were divorced. She remarried Rabbi Pupko. He died. She's now married to Dr. Osabel, who needs a refu shlema. Yitzhak, you know what I'm talking about. She's a very great lady, devoted her life to the Jewish people. You have no idea what she did for poor Kalat from Russia, poor Kalat from Ethiopia. This is a lady that it's a privilege to know. So we come back from Russia, and we start talking about everything you saw. And she was very upset. You're building Moscow. Millions of dollars, billions of dollars being poured in. Bring them to Israel. What do we need another Gullus for? It's a fair question. And I have to tell you, it's my own feeling. I think I'm right. The more communities we build in Chutz Laretz, the more Jews we create. You see, what's happened in Russia, 1.5 million Jews came in Aliyah from the former Soviet Union. Another 750,000, I don't know exactly what the figures are, but that's a ballpark figure. They wound up in the United States, they wound up in South Africa, Australia. But you see, when you have a local Jewish community, you create Jews. Well, look what's happened in the United States, right here in this Kollel. You have two students, born and bred in Russia, Yosef Gachman, Avraham Rachman, Bukharin, raised in Moscow, became frum in Kew Gardens Hills, became frum in the Queens community. Yomo, Brooklyn, somehow he gets to Camp Morashah, Rabbi Willick's Kollel, and as they say, the rest is history. What's happened in Moscow, because you have a Torah presence, Jews are coming out of the woodwork. It's beyond words. Oligarchs. Manufacturers. We're Jewish. They scratch their hand, their blood comes out. What is this blood? What is in it? What does it represent? And you create more Jews and more Jews. When the Soviet Union fell, they made a cheshbon that in all of Russia there are probably 250,000 Jews. Today there are 250,000 people who identify as Jews in Moscow itself. So you have a Jewish presence, more Jews, reach out in dignity. Shmirat Shabbat? I don't know. I live with the principle that once a Jew tastes Shabbat, he'll never want to leave it. It's unbelievable. Our Torah, our religion, our way of life, our learning, our dedication. Expose Jews to great Jews, to Jews of passion, and the lights kindle one the other. And then ultimately, the greatest beneficiary is the state of Israel. The best Kamen Aliyah. You know that I've said, and I've said it here, I've said it all over the world. Take the United States, for example. We get the Trumot Maisrat from the United States. When a Nefesh B'Nefesh plane comes in, do a biographical study of who's on that plane. What quality, what ability, what dedication. And ultimately, what a contribution they make as we build the glorious state of Israel. And I have to tell you, we get the best. Right in this classroom, two students rebuked me, reprimanded me. Don't get upset, Yosef. The Rebbe can handle it. But these students had a taina to me. I know them. I knew their parents, grandparents, great-grandparents. In one case, great-great-grandparents. Why? Rebbe, why didn't you stay in America? They have complaints about some of the Ritz faculty. The faculty would be different. You would have such influence. And I told them, forget about the mitzvah, forget about Eretz Yisrael, forget about Yishuv Eretz, forget about the Ramban and Sefer HaMitzvah, forget about the Avnei Nesis Tshuva. You guys are dummies. If I would have stayed in America, I'd be like everyone else. I'd think exactly the same. I became Aaron Rakefet, Alatma Takodesh. You understand? So ultimately, we all benefit. Build a community. Make the investment. Create more Jews. And look at the results. And the final beneficiary is right here. Eretz Yisrael. The course, what the end was, and that's for fundraising, time is running out. In other words, you take the American assimilation. Think of those of you who have been in America 100 years, 150 years. I'm in America 120 years. My wife is in America 150 years. Time is running out. Because once the families assimilate, very hard to bring them back. Now you still have Jews in Moscow where they still remember that it was written on their parents' passport, Yid, that they're Jews. You can talk to them. There's no recollection anymore of Yiddish. It's not like the 80s where I could speak Yiddish freely to anyone above 40 years of age. That already has dissipated, obviously. But time is running out. So we have to do what we have to do. But I hope I've been of some inspiration to you, young men. You have your life before you. Ubachata b'chayim. Make the right choices. You can influence a world. And you can light the candles of Torah and Mesorah brighter than ever. Because the people are out there. The Western world has nothing to answer. The Toshavim have emptiness. The Geirim have beauty, understanding, vision, and unbelievable achievement. And now, bear with me, I want to give out some, I have a lot of, first of all, I want to show you one picture that's not there. When you come up, look at it. This is Yosef Mendel Lovish HaTzadik celebrating his 70th birthday in a little area, I think it's called Sushi, outside of Moscow. Those are all Jewish children this summer who are at a Jewish camp. Could you imagine what we're seeing? Yosef HaTzadik, right in the middle. The man who was sentenced to 15 years originally, it was more, and then they cut the sentence down, and those with him sentenced to death, try to kidnap a plane, remember or not, 1970. And here he is, 2017, in Russia, Harav Yosef Mendelovich, surrounded by Jewish boys and girls, what we are creating. The slideshow you saw is actually a booklet that was produced, but only a few copies, so be aware. The world in which we live, it's amazing what you can do. I want to thank Professor Mori Tarigan and our Rabbi Yosef Mordechai Gachman. I'll give him a smicha for all it's worth. And they put a lot of effort in to be able to make this real. Freebies. This is for David Goldis. This is about going up in the Har HaBayit, signed by Gedol Yisrael, expressing the opinion that someone named Aaron Rakefet expressed to you. Exactly.
I had to tell him last night when I met them.
Exactly what I told you. So look what. Here it is, Morty. Your wife said something to me Friday night which you didn't catch. To be buried outside of Yerushalayim? So I want you to show her it's Eretz Yisrael, nothing to do with Yerushalayim. And forget, it's better not to bury in Yerushalayim, if you know what I'm talking about. If anyone reads Hebrew, this is fabulous. Shas gearing up, realizing there's going to be an election, could be shortly, and Derry can no longer be the drawing card. They're trying to resuscitate. Here you see like Chabad, Rabbi Avadya Yosef still alive. It's a beautiful pamphlet filled with nice Divrei Torah, beautiful pictures of Rabbi Avadya, and I tell you, it's unbelievable. They become chassidim. This is an article, very interesting article about Israel and how more and more kosher restaurants are becoming kosher, and read the reasons why. It's very interesting. Not religious reasons, but they give you reasons simply to catch our breath. In addition to having a greater clientele, we need the Shabbat off. And the very fancy restaurants tell here they make more money being kosher than they did being treif open 7/24. Here's something interesting that my wife differs with. Chabad is suing a woman to wear a skirt at gym. And my wife says when you go to gym, gym pants are more tzniyistic than a skirt. Think about it. This is beautiful. Who was here in Israel at the time? Charlie, do you remember when Yosef Borg sent back Bugsy, who did he send back, which mobster? Mayor Lansky. Remember? I was furious. A Jew wants to die in Israel, said, and he was never indicted. They sent him back and he was never indicted. I bring him back to life in Israel. Here's a mobster, friend of Mayor Lansky, whose greatest moment now is Chabad Miniola, and he's speaking about how he fought the Nazis, and he's become a total Shema Mitzvah. What Chabad can do, no one else can do. This at the end, 1 second, a world of material. This is a fabulous article by the Charedit Gera Hasida Supreme Court judge or judge in New York, Ruchel Fryer, about education, about the girl Malki Klein who committed suicide, and beautiful, beautiful article. This is the way I ended off yesterday's class, and I got a big compliment from my grandson. He loved the ending, wow. But all right, I found a source for the Rambam. In addition to the Gemara, the Gemara Nida of the Malach teaching the kid, that's an interesting source. And what a picture, what a story. This is what I refer to, Shmuel Yankelevich from the Chovevei Torah crowd, 25 Phenomena of Renewed Modern Orthodoxy. Some of it is beautiful, but Yemot HaMashiach, we got to work with the Jews first. But to tell us that we haven't accomplished, oh my gosh. Anyone interested in the gallery of pictures of Rakefet at 770. Here it is. Number of copies. Here is what I quoted, the reply to Rabbi Shlomo Riskin by Rabbi Wolf. Two copies of the reply. Anyone who wants what I photographed from the sanctity of the synagogue, what I quoted yesterday, but this is even more material. This is very interesting, the New York Times Business Day about Trump, how Trump, you think he's not getting his agenda, gives you a long list of areas where he can act on his own and do his agenda, which basically is my agenda, and you can't stop him. Very fascinating article, New York Times 9/11, that they're finding that with the DNA, they're still identifying people 16 years later. Unbelievable, because DNA has improved. Anyone who wants a very important document, the investiture speech of Rabbi Dr. Ari Berman, our student in this kollel and the fifth president of Yeshiva University.
Maybe he can get a biography of Belkin.
We'll see what's happening. I'm looking, I spoke with one student, was here Seder, we'll see if he shows up again. And if he does, I'll try to have some influence. 1 second. Yitzchak, take this from Michael. This article you will not understand from the New York Times, but there is a player, Giancarlo Stanton. I can't even start to pronounce it. He's playing where David wastes his time instead of mastering Shas and Paiskem. Baruch Hashem. It's his cousin who owns a fourth owner, a part owner of the team. He's going to be very wealthy shortly, your cousin. Baruch Hashem. David, his name is Joel Mill, and he's a Yiddish tzaddik. He was here in class, and you're a class. You went to the same school. He's a Maimonides graduate.
Okay.
And can Rakefet have a complaint when he comes into the Marlins Stadium and he finds his two volumes on the Rav on the owner's desk? Come on, cut it out. Anyway, so very interesting. He's heading for 61 home runs. Is it a record or isn't it? Or clean? All right, you got to read the article. Do me a favor. David, sit down, Yitzchak. Even though he's a Rav and you're not a Rav, give him a lecture as Zalkeninepis. Could you imagine? He doesn't understand clean in relation to the 61 home run.
He goes
to Mikvah. Okay. And gentlemen, finally, again I repeat, believe me, I want to thank you all very much for coming. I want to thank the people across the world. Will they see the pictures in addition to the talk?
I have a file. I made a PDF that they can upload.
Okay, so you have to work with Yomo. Or go down and we'll look for Rob in a minute. So I want to thank everyone for being my students. It's very humbling. I what happened at 770 was very humbling. I came a private citizen. And within minutes, I was surrounded, and wow. And I imagine they called it the happening of the day that a little kid from the Bronx came to 770. All right, I came, I explained
yesterday.
Well,
the amazing thing is, you gave 2 years of shiurim on the Rebbe. It left the students with a positive attitude towards Chabad. Instead of it being a cut-up sessions, they were all objective and researched. I went through all my notes yesterday, put them all together in a file. They were really good classes.
Thank you.
You should have it written up.
Thank you. Baruch Hashem, I'm working very hard. If you were in my office this morning, I was dealing with Princeton and making corrections on the magazine.
Chabad lectures really become a booklet.
Let the Chabad write it up. Well, we'll get there, Bezrat Hashem. Anyway, I want to thank everyone for being my students from the bottom of my heart. And above all, Ani Modeh LaKadosh Baruch Hu, as some of you know, it's my 59th year of teaching, and believe me, I feel like a kid in the classroom. However, in consonance with my age, I'm very happy that I switched the Sunday class to Sunday morning. So I made one change. And a second change, I'm not going to teach on fast days. I know that next Sunday morning, officially, there's a kollel, but I just physically don't want to strain myself. So next week, the Monday class will be as per usual. And you'll see with the class, I'm going to go further with Yehuda Leib Foya. And then I'm beginning with how the Agudat HaRabbanim came to be. And we're going to touch upon, you're going to see something amazing, problems that were raised in 1902 that haunt American Orthodoxy for the next 100 years. You'll see. It's unbelievable. But before we come to next Monday, I want to wish everyone, it's hard to believe already, Wednesday night, Thursday, Friday, it should be a ktiva b'ktiva tova l'shnat chayim shalom osha with an ayin v'kol tov sela bayit haguf nahora ma'alya aleinu v'al kol Yisrael. Okay, so until we meet again in the new year, please take the freebies, the picture of Rabbi Yosef I need, but you're welcome to look at it. And until we meet again in health and happiness, das v'danya. Thank you.
When he comes to visit.
Pinchas Goldschmidt has an aunt.
But he's all in.
There was only one that they couldn't read. People write and they can't read. I have no idea what that says.
Is this one I just switched off here?
Yeah.
Or is there a safe button?
Just switch, that's it.